This is the Pure Green Podcast, episode 22. This week, we're turning the tables, and the guest for this week's show is, well, me. This is a rare peek inside my life. The things that were important to me growing up, some of the trends and changes I've noticed in sustainable living, my thoughts on raising a child with sustainable values, and lots of other things too. There's no one better to interview me than Catherine Oakes, our web editor and the voice behind much of our social media. Catherine is a lovely, lovely person. I feel lucky to work with her, and Pure Green is lucky to have her. I'll let her take it away.
I remember when I first saw a copy of Pure Green magazine. I was instantly drawn to its beautiful cover and captivated by the depth of the content inside. Fast forward to a few years later, and as the web editor for Pure Green, I have fallen down a rabbit hole of endless inspiration, wonder, and a passion for the cause that burns even more brightly than before. This is in no small way attributed to the founder and editor, Celine McKay, who has built up the magazine since its advent and continues to do so with more fervor today. As Pure Green has recently expanded into a digital publication, launched this podcast, and grown its community tenfold, I am thrilled to have the chance to bring you all in touch with its roots in a conversation with its founder, Celine. I sincerely hope that this brings a bit more inspiration and empowerment into your day as it did mine, and that you find yourself compelled even a little bit to live a more inspired and conscious lifestyle.
Hi, Celine.
Hi, Catherine.
So my first question is, you grew up in Muskoka, Canada, and what you mentioned in your article on the Pure Green blog about living an inspired and conscious life had so much to do with how you feel about the environment now. So can you give us a little snapshot of what life was like there for you as a kid growing up?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, honestly, living here was the most organic thing ever. I mean, I spent every day pretty well outside. Winter, summer, it didn't matter. The weather, when you're young, the weather has no impact on you, it seems. And I remember that very clearly, that the outdoors and playing outside was such a huge, huge part of my life. And then, you know, just being part of nature every day really created an appreciation for it that I almost didn't really realize was there until I grew up and moved away and things started to look a little different, and then I started to realize exactly how big of an impact that it had. But the natural surroundings here are just so, it's very evergreen, so lots and lots and lots of trees. And we live, like, Muskoka actually means land of the lake, so so literally you can't be away from a lake. Like, it's impossible. They're everywhere.
And
so the beauty of the, you know, the environment is something that it just becomes a part of you if you're paying attention.
Right. It sounds like it's hard not to pay attention.
Yeah, definitely.
And where else did you move to?
I've lived here for the bulk of my life, but I did move away for a little bit in my late teens and early 20s, and I lived closer to Toronto for a little while, and then I also lived in the States for a little bit in Florida.
Okay.
Yeah, but it was only a couple of years, and then I came back.
Well, Florida is certainly different from Muskoka.
Yes, very different. I mean, it was beautiful. I really loved living there. That's, you know, it was really, really stunning. And where I was central Florida in a town called Ocala. And so it was very agricultural. And, you know, you drive down the road and instead of seeing lakes, you see like pasture after pasture with gorgeous white fences and horses, and it was beautiful, except that I never got used to the fact that when I was there, they didn't recycle. It just made me heartsick. I wanted to fill my car with all my garbage and take it home.
Oh, absolutely. I've done that before.
Yeah.
Definitely have, where you store up all of the things that you're going to take home and recycle properly with you when you get there.
Yeah. Yeah. And I don't know what it's like there now, if they do recycle, but I know that it's, there's a lot of private, you know, neighborhoods and things like that that are trying to do that. So I can't really speak to what it's like now, but at the time, no recycling.
Well, if we have an update, we'll put that in the show notes for all of our listeners.
Sounds good.
Okay. So your mother, you said, would make pretty much everything in your pantry as you grew up, and flowers, bread, you had a garden, right?
Mm-hmm.
Produce. So what sort of messages or values did that instill in you? Do you feel like having such a close connection to seeing how things are produced and made on a daily basis, did that inspire you throughout your life? Did you ever waver from that, or was it something that was just a part of who you were?
Well, I mean, of course it became a huge part of me, but the thing is, I feel like even at the time when I was growing up, I knew that it was something that was pretty special. I knew that things weren't like that in everybody's home, and it just created a culture in our house that was really, really nice. You know, the whole family was involved in doing things, and we made everything by hand, and it just, you know, it just became part of your daily routines, and it just felt so great. And of course, I was homeschooled as well, not for my whole education, but for a solid 5 years. And so, you know, there was a lot more opportunity to sort of do things within the home. But, you know, I still remember, I remember my mom's mill to sort of to grind the flour, and I remember making jam, and I remember one of the things I remember the most was actually my dad. He had a routine to make bread, and it was an almost daily routine, and it just, you know, those memories are really, really strong, and I'll treasure them always. But, you know, besides that feeling that things were really, you know, cohesive and fun and special in my home, it also normalized that way of life. And, you know, and what I mean by that is that it just never felt like extra work to do these things. And so when I hear the argument of not having the time to do things like that, it just sort of reminds me that once you work it into your routine, it isn't work. It's just, it feels normal.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
And it definitely instilled an appreciation for making things by hand. You know, it kind of helped negate that feeling of instant gratification that we're so used to these days, you know, taking the long way around and doing things slowly. Just, you know, I felt that appreciation growing up for sure. And it helped me understand the true value of something as well when you have to work for it. You know, it's just so different, the half day that it takes to make a loaf of bread versus buying one. And of course, over the years, I mean, things change. There were four kids in my family, and so when I was little, there was definitely a lot more of that. And then when my mom had four kids to tend to, you know, we did let some of those things go. But I think that that's part of it too. You have to know that you can give yourself permission to not do these things all the time, but do them as much as you can and make sure that the process is always enjoyable. That's definitely key.
Right. I agree with that. I think also it's a different cadence too, that to speak to your point about realizing that you can incorporate these things into your lifestyle, even if you are busy, it's a different frame of mind, right? It's not unfamiliar to you because it's just something that you see as a part of your everyday.
Yes, for sure. And even now, I mean, as an adult, you know, you asked me if I strayed away from those things. And I mean, the answer is definitely yes. When I first left home, you know, I think that there's a bit of a shock in tending to your own home. And we know when your mom always did it. And so I definitely didn't move right into doing those types of things, especially because I was, you know, working and not always in a position to do them. So, you know, I did kind of go away from that for a little while, but then definitely came back to it. And even now I have to remind myself to make time for these things and, you know, and to picture my life growing up so that I can give Charlie a similar experience.
Mm-hmm. Right. It even reminds me of that podcast that you had with Laura Wright of The First Mess, where she referred to this farm to table movement as something that wasn't farm to table for her at all. She grew up with it. And that was her everyday life, just like having homemade bread and homemade flowers was a part of yours as well, which I think is interesting to speak to that point, because it does seem like it's all kind of in comparison to what you do, whether or not it has a name that is different or associates it with something that's unfamiliar to you or it is familiar to you. It's more about what you want to make a point of doing in your life and what you want to center around, what kind of values and ethics are there.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, it's a sliding scale for sure. Like my cousins who live in Quebec, they live off grid. And so without electricity, they, you know, they took that a lot further than we did. And they had a like humongous garden. They still do. And they got a lot of their food from there. And so, you know, there's definitely a sliding scale, but it is definitely, you know, about deciding on what's important to you and then making time for it. But then also just enjoying the process.
Mm-hmm. And I do think that that's tricky for some people to do, especially if you live in an area where it's more urban and metropolitan and you do have so much access to things that are pre-made and handed to you. There's more microwave dinners in your life growing up than loaves of fresh bread, then it's going to take more of an effort to change that.
Yeah, I think so. I don't know, though.
At least in the beginning.
Yeah, I mean, of course. I mean, proximity to amenities and services, definitely. I mean, convenience is the number one thing I would say that sort of gets in the way of this kind of life. But I don't know. I mean, I almost feel like people who live in urban areas can be even more attracted to that these kinds of things because your life is so frenetic. Mm-hmm. The pace of things around you is just always so high speed that it can be really refreshing to take things a little slower sometimes.
Yeah. Absolutely. I would agree with that, especially living in an area like I do, which is right by New York City.
Mm-hmm.
It is very, very refreshing.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I've been for sure. I mean, I think one of the things here, growing up here, you start to take the, in, you know, your surroundings a little bit for granted. And so you sometimes lose awareness of how nice you actually have it.
Yeah. It's not hard to do, I think, but... So I wanted to circle back around to that point in your life where all of a sudden you were making more of an effort to implement these things into your lifestyle. And I always think it's so funny to think of you this way because knowing you as I do not picture this as what happened, but, you can prove me wrong. You said that when you first saw the quote unquote, these aren't your quotes, these are my own air quotes, mm-hmm. green light, of realizing how toxic things were based on the book you read, Ecoholic, that you were fanatical about it, that you were railroading people and chucking things into the garbage. And I, like I said, that's so funny to me because I know you and I just can't picture that. But I'm so curious about the shift and what helped you to accept people as they were and life as it was and to slowly implement change in a way that I guess is less scary.
Yeah. I mean, I think when I use the word fanatical, I think it, what I wanted to convey is just how completely it consumed me. And I think that's really what that period was all about for me. I'm a person who really likes knowledge and learning. And when I start to dig into something and it grabs hold of me, it's like, I just can't let go of it. And it just keeps gaining more and more and more speed and strength. And so I just consume everything that I can about it. And the nature of, you know, what I was learning about, which was the toxicity in my environment, but more specifically, the things I was using in my body and in my home every day, the realities of those things are really scary. So even though you can't necessarily feel the effect of them in that moment, throughout your life, you will. And, you know, when you start to throw words around like cancer and things like that, it just scares you. And so, you know, I don't know, some people seem to be able to turn a blind eye to it and decide that, well, you know, they could get killed by a bus, you know, any day, you know, your number could come up any second.
Yeah.
And so why should I worry about all these minute things? But to me, that just seemed so nearsighted and foolish because I really treasure life on this planet and I want it to be as, you know, my life to be as good as it can be, and those around me as well. And so that's where the fanaticism, the passion came in. It consumed me, and in a very short period of time, I went through everything that I used in my home and on my body and threw everything out. But it was funny because as soon as I started that process, it was actually really easy. It wasn't this giant purge or anything like that. Oh. I quickly learned how to read labels and recognize what was good and what was bad. And then I just, you know, slowly, well, not so slowly, took those things away. And, you know, when you asked me about the shift away from that, the reason that I wanted to move away from that sort of place was sort of twofold. Was one, because I felt a lot of stress and fear and a panicked sensation that things were out of my control. It was kind of like a form of, I don't know, environmental claustrophobia or something. And, you know, that's just not a happy place. It really isn't. You can't live in fear of the things around you. I think awareness of those things and being able to deal with those things in a healthy way is really, really important. But you can't let it consume you the way that I did. And, yeah, and so, like, that was the first thing. And then the second thing was that because I was so passionate about these things, I really wanted to, like, I don't know, get the people in my life to feel the same way. And obviously that wasn't hard with my mom and my family. They were already sort of very aware anyway. But like, you know, my friends or my in-laws or, you know, anyone that I would come across, I just really wanted to press upon them how important this stuff was because I loved them and I wanted them to be healthy and safe as well and educated. But, you know, right away, I could sort of sense from other people what their reactions were, and it wasn't always good, and I started to realize that I couldn't force people to change or to see things a certain way. And so I started to think about that and how I could share my message or my passion in a way that spread positivity and inspiration, and so that's where the approach came from. Yeah. So I don't know. Did I answer your question?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. No, you did.
Okay.
I like that answer a lot, actually, because it really does. It's true. When you learn about this stuff, it's so jarring. And I remember when I first started to learn about it. I mean, I haven't been learning about it as long as you have or had half of the experiences that you have. But it was very earth-shaking for me because I felt this need and this desire to control something that was so out of my control. And it's easy to just approach people in that manner because you expect them to be on the same level, right? You expect them to see how important this is. And they don't, because they weren't in your shoes before. They weren't in a place where they had that epiphany and all of a sudden things changed. So it makes a lot of sense that people would have that reaction to it. And one of the things that I love about Pure Green so much is that we do take a more empowering approach, which is drastically different from what you would see in mass media. You have so many fear-based messages and guilt and shame that if we don't do something now, then it's all going to be on your shoulders when the world comes collapsing in on itself. And who really can take action when they're scared where standing where they are?
No, very, very true. And those are the things that I became aware of really early on and wanted to do something about. And I find that fear, at least in me, it just causes me to close myself off. And I think it's the same, you know, in others, in our society as well. And the solution to our problems can only be a collective one. So closing, you know, getting people to close themselves off because of a fear-based reaction to things is not the right way. But at the same time, one thing that I'm really aware of with Pure Green is that it's kind of this, well, at least I feel like it's possibly the slower route to change, because I'm not scaring the pants off of people and, you know, really shaking them up so that they can see that we need to change things. Sometimes, I guess it depends on the kind of person you are to just you know, be able to take those messages and act on them in a healthy way, or if they just cause you to give up hope and crawl in a hole. I don't know.
It depends on the day, really.
Yeah, for sure. But, you know, one thing I did know for sure is that there was enough messages out there about, well, enough and maybe not enough at the same time, as a two-sided coin. But, you know, there was enough media outlets sharing the scary side of things. And so I wanted to take a different tact and just experiment with it and see where it led me and see how people reacted and see, you know, if I could, you know, sway the conversation a little bit.
And do you think that you have?
I hope so. I mean, yeah, I think so. You know, I also made a conscious approach as well to be sort of not neutral, but kind of neutral, meet people in the middle, because I've always felt that, you know, people who are really, really converted, they don't need more of this message. You know, they're already there, they're living their life. Yeah. And so I very consciously wanted Pure Green to be a gateway so that people could, who weren't thinking about it before, maybe started to think about it. And then as a result of their exposure to Pure Green and the stories that we tell, and that's what it is, it's stories of people who are living their lives, you know, in an inspiring, conscious way. And so once they had been exposed to those things, maybe it would lead them to learn a little bit more. And, you know, I found as well that we usually tend to pick an area that appeals to us more and start there. So whether that's health or, you know, the environment or whatever, I've definitely noticed that. So I'd definitely hope to think that we are making a difference. But it's hard to say.
I would say yes.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, Pure Green's always growing. It's always evolving. So, I mean, that should be a positive indicator right there.
Mm-hmm. Right. And also, as of late, things in this, I guess, in this arena, I would say, have really, really become more, I hate to say trend, but fad-like, maybe. Every, you know, there's always a seed of the month club, whether it's chia seeds or flax seeds or something, where everybody's using this, and it's just so much more widely accepted than it ever has been before. I mean, people juice, people have an awareness of organic food and vegetables and factory farming. So I really think that it's changed in so far that it's a part of our lexicon now as a society in a big way. And I was wondering if you've seen that shift anywhere over the years, because Pure Green has been around for about 4.5 years. So have you seen any kind of public opinion of it change or shift as time has gone by, now that it's become something that's more widely accepted?
Yes, most definitely. I mean, there's so much more, you know, grassroots kind of organizations out there that are working to raise awareness, but even our just sort of our love of handmade products and things that are made by hand and made well, you know, even that is shifting us away from this mass consumerism and things that have been a problem in the past. But, you know, I can definitely sense a shift in the general consciousness. And I suppose that now there's a lot more evidence in our bodies of the effects of our lifestyle, things like cancer or Alzheimer's or these chronic diseases that we can't really explain. You know, why are they so much more prevalent now than they were before? And so when people either see things like this or they actually experience it, hopefully not, but many have, you know, you start to look for the causes of these problems, which in turn leads to awareness and learning and education and all of that sort of things. And as our respect for our bodies grow, I've started to notice that it spreads to our planet and to each other as well. So, you know, the health trends or, you know, consciousness that I've really noticed, because a lot of it, that's where it starts, is with our own bodies and with our own health. It all impacts the environment positively. And I've definitely noticed a shift towards inclusion versus exclusion and, you know, to positivity versus negativity. So I'm definitely feeling hopeful.
Yeah, there has absolutely been a shift. I would agree with you there. I think that at some point, people do have to get a little fed up with having instant gratification and things that don't necessarily feel right all the time, you know? When there's so many chemical-laden products out there and mass-produced anything and everything, at a certain point, I think that we do start to crave a little bit of slowness.
Oh, of course. Absolutely. And I think as well that once people start to notice a change in themselves and in their own lives as well, I sort of feel like they start to realize that you do make a difference. You know, that whole thing about, you know, the power of one and all of that. I think it's definitely very true. And people are starting to realize that it does matter. That every small decision that you make on an individual basis has an impact. And you know, the whole thought that you cast a vote every time you buy something.
Right.
I think people are starting to grab hold of that and start to realize it makes a difference and feel anger, you know, that products that are very unhealthy for us are available. I mean, that's just not right. So,
right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that I loved so much that's really stuck with me recently was the interview we did with Lisa Hackwith of Hackwith Designs on the website. And Lisa told me that the best advice that she's ever received about sustainability was to keep in mind that even though you have something that might be cheap, it was not cheap for somebody else, that everything comes with a cost. So having that in the back of your head whenever you make a purchase or whenever you cast your vote, when you buy something and go somewhere and do something new, it's such an interesting and complex perspective to carry around with you. And at the same time, I think that that's the impetus to a change in your lifestyle or maybe a tiny change in some part of your lifestyle that might then lead to a greater one. And I would agree with you that because a large part of our magazine does feature people who are leading these lives, that in and of itself is the most inspiring thing. To see people empowered and to see people connected is perhaps one of the most effective things that you can experience when you look at someone else's life, because it's really not that much different from yours at the end of the day.
No, exactly. I mean, again, it goes back to normalizing these kinds of things. And it's also aspirational too. And you see the beauty in someone's life, and that's intentional. I want it to seem beautiful because I want people to want to strive for that. You know, and I love Lisa, what she said as well. That was a really lovely thing. And it brings, to me, it sort of calls up the social justice part of it a little bit as well. And you have to, you know, be careful to include the environment in that. It's all connected. But it reminds me of something that I do, which is I call it a life cycle analysis. Every time I make a purchase or I bring something into my life, I go through. And it's funny because it sounds very intentional, but it's not now because it's just happens within the blink of an eye for me because
right.
I'm just, you know, like it's part of my internal dialogue now. But, you know, when you go to buy something or bring something into your life, if you ask yourself the questions of, you know, where did this product come from? You know, both where was it made? Where were the raw materials sourced? And then as I'm, you know, what does it cost? All of those things. And then when I bring it into my life and I'm using it, what is it healthy for me? Is it bringing a positive energy into my life? And then what happens to this object when I'm finished with it? You know, there's no away. You know, you can't just throw something away and it's gone. It's never gone. And so I always think about that. To me, that's almost the most important piece, is what will happen to this particular thing when I'm finished with it. So those questions are something I ask myself all the time, and they guide my decisions and what I bring into my life.
I think that one of the things I've been the most proud of doing recently has been considering that life cycle of a product. And I'm really, really proud of myself for reusing my old socks as rags.
Nice.
Yeah. So I walk around the house with socks in my hand scrubbing, and it looks kind of crazy, but I'm really proud of it. I like having socks on my hands. So it does, but I agree with you. It does totally change your mindset. And it also makes me feel that much more connected and, empowered. It does. It really does. It makes me feel responsible. And then I'm taking accountability for my actions. And it it really does make me want to do more.
Well, I'm really happy to hear that, Catherine. I mean, that's awesome. I love socks as rags.
Yes. I'm working on darning them, but I really have to get to that point before I seriously consider my handy skills there. So,
yeah.
I'd love to. I mean, do you darn your socks?
No, I don't. I have to admit, I don't. I'm not.
Do people do that?
Oh yeah, I think so. Yeah. But I don't know though. I mean, like the way our socks are made these days, they're not. You know, I'm not sure how if you could darn them the same way that we used to be able to. But what I do instead is I buy really good quality socks. I mean, by the time I have some socks that have holes in them, in not in the feet, but in the cuff where my dog chewed them when he was a puppy, and he's 11 now.
Yeah.
So those are some old socks. So yeah, by the time those
cycle, huh?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and then always, you know, I recycle all my fibers and things like that too. But
yeah, that's another conversation.
I know. Yeah.
I don't think that I've ever really talked too much about recycling your fibers, but then again, I haven't been walking around with socks in both hands my whole life either. So, baby steps.
Of course.
And I did have a question for you about Pure Green and the empowering message that you stand behind. And like I said, something that I'm so proud to be a part of because it's so unique. But I always wonder, do you find that it's harder to really deliver this message? And I know we talked about this before, but do you find that it's a little trickier to get your point across when you have to kind of, I don't want to say mask it in beauty, but when you are intentionally delivering a message in this particular aesthetic?
Yes, because what I hinted at before is that I felt that change was a lot slower going at it this way because I'm not throwing around those really scary words at people. And so sometimes I'm tempted to do that. And I think that now that Pure Green's been around for a while and this kind of conversation has been around in our society in general a little longer, I think people are ready to hear things like that. And as long as you're always, you know, approaching it in a sustainable way. And I mean that in a sense that it doesn't scare people away. They still feel that empowerment and that beauty through it. So I'd like to introduce a little bit more of those conversations into what Pure Green is doing. But I mean, it hasn't been hard for me at all because the stories that we're telling inspire me so much that it's just really nice and it's fun. I am a little conscious, though, sometimes that we're not green enough, you know, when it's like for people who do live their life in this way so passionately and so completely. It sometimes makes me feel like Pure Green is just a little bit too entry level. But I've been really in love with the way that we're approaching things, but I do feel like it's time to sort of ramp things up a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Well, then we'll see where it goes.
Yeah, exactly.
That will big changes for Pure Green, or maybe not big changes, but new things on the horizon.
Yeah, incremental change. Incremental. I mean, incremental change.
I like that. So in that same vein, something that I've also been curious about was if there were a few different topics that you could address immediately, Pure Green magazine aside, if there was something that is so time sensitive and so pressing for you that you think needs to be solved now, what would that be?
Oh boy. Honestly, that question is impossible to answer.
Oh, is it?
Yeah. Well, no, it is. I mean, it is and it isn't. When I look at these sort of bigger issues that are facing us, they're all interconnected, and that's the thing. There's no single thing that you do that isn't impacting something else. I mean, it's the law of gravity of the universe, of just physics, and it's true with the environment too. And I don't know, but if I had to pick two areas, I think our oceans are something that is really, really pressing. But see, again, when you start to talk about the oceans and the things that are influencing them, I mean, it's just, it's circular. I mean, everything is feeding itself, but the health of our oceans impacts us all. And if we don't start to take care of them better really, really, really soon, it's going to sneak up on us and it's going to be ugly. Because everything is connected to the oceans. I mean, they're everything to us. They impact our weather. They impact our fresh water, our food. I mean, I forget the statistics, but literally it's, I think, a third of the world is dependent on the oceans for food, and solely for food, and also our economy as well. So many of the world relies on fishing for their livelihood. And also oceans absorb 30% of our CO, the CO2 in the atmosphere. Mm-hmm. But it's having an impact on the oceans. So it's making them more acidic, which is threatening even more all the aquatic life that lives in the oceans. And if this ecosystem falls apart, I mean, it's, I don't know if you've ever watched any of those or read any of the projections of what would happen if the oceans died.
I haven't. No.
Well, it's really, really, really scary. It's the scariest thing that could happen.
Wow.
But again, I mean, it's all connected. So, you know, pollution affects it. I mean, plastic pollution in the oceans is a huge problem. Things don't biodegrade in water the way they do on land. On land, there are organisms that act on organisms to break them down, or not organisms that act on matter to break it down. Whereas in the ocean, what tends to happen is things just break up into smaller and smaller and smaller pieces. Mm. And so when something is labeled as biodegradable, they're referring to biodegradable on land, not in water. So the pollution in our oceans is really hard to get rid of, and it bioaccumulates. So what that means is that when, you know, you have shrimp or krill that are feeding on bits of pollution or toxic chemicals or whichever, and then you have a slightly bigger fish that comes along and eats that, and a slightly bigger fish, and eventually you're getting up to, you know, birds that are eating the fish, and land animals that are eating the birds, and I mean polar bears. I mean, you can analyze the tissues of a polar bear in who's never been exposed to our civilization, and you can find pretty startling concentrations of these chemicals in their fatty tissues. So, I mean, it affects us all. And then, of course, as humans, we're eating that too. So it's in our bodies as well. And, you know, so things like that, and also our use of fertilizers and chemicals on land, they have a huge impact. I mean, I could go on and on and on.
Yeah.
But just, you know, raising awareness for what would happen if our oceans, if this were to continue, is really critical to me. But again, you can't have a positive impact on the oceans without having a positive impact on everything else. So it's a good place to start.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. I would agree. And I don't think that it's hard for people to appreciate how beautiful the ocean is and why it's worth saving just from a superficial point of view. No matter how much you know about all of that, it's something mm-hmm. that I think people are connected to regardless.
Absolutely. But it's easy. I mean, with the ocean as well, it's so easy to forget about what's happening below the surface.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the world's most diverse ecosystem. There are, I mean, probably millions of organisms we haven't even discovered yet in our oceans. And all of that is threatened. You know, and as well, the desalination of the ocean as a result of glacier melt is a big problem too. If that continues at the rate that it is, it's going to affect the, indirectly has a really big impact on our weather. So natural disasters will increase. All of those scary things that we don't see as related are extremely connected. And,
Scary stuff.
Yeah, yeah. And then the second thing, I mean, this is a pretty controversial topic, but overpopulation to me is something that's really critical too. It's something that's not talked about as much, or at least I don't notice it being talked about as much, but
yeah,
the
not,
Earth.
Really.
Yeah, and I don't, I mean, the scary thing about you know, when you talk about population growth and management, is that it quickly spins off into ethical conversations that are just impossible to answer and get around. But I think that if we were to globally raise our awareness and our consciousness of this, that I don't know. My hope is that it would happen organically, but
you probably wouldn't have shows like 19 Kids and Counting that are super popular anymore.
Yeah, well, I know, but you know, if you studied sociology at all, then you know that population is directly tied to things like education and women and poverty and opportunity. And so the places in the world where those things are, you know, difficult to come by, you know, change will be slow in those regions. And so I don't know. I don't know what the answer is, but you know, the reality is that the Earth is at its max. It's reached its limit in terms of the carrying capacity to sustain life. And you know, I just can't help but think of what would happen if it just widens the gap between those who have what they need, whose basic services are met or basic needs are met, and those whose aren't. And so, you know, and with those things, you introduce, you know, more strife and war and famine and all of those really, really scary things. And I just don't want to see us go there any more than we already have. And so figuring out a way to talk about overpopulation in a really positive way in order to implement change to me is something that's really important. So, yeah, I don't know. I don't know how that was for an answer. One of those rare moments where I get really into the information on it. I hope it's not too depressing or scary, but I think about it a lot, and you know, it practically brings me to tears because I just feel so passionately about it.
I think that it's hard not to. They're hard to hear. They really are.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah.
So with all that being said, I of course you have to do what you can, and Pure Green is a great example of enforcing that perspective of do what you can and appreciate the beauty of things and preserve what's important and what also happens to be so beautiful as well. So do you feel like as a mother now that this is going to be easier for you to instill in Charlie because you're so passionate and because you've lived this lifestyle? Do you find that it naturally trickles down to her, or are you more concerned about making sure that you set that example?
Oh, I think it's a bit of both. I mean, I've noticed that people who become parents, it's one of the first times in their life when their eyes are open to the types of things that are in their baby's environment. And so that seems to be a turning point in terms of the chemicals that are in the home and the products that you use on their baby and things like that. So that's really positive. But with that, you know, becoming a parent, it just, you want nothing but the best for your baby, and you want to ensure that their future is secure. And that's where the fear comes in a little bit, is because, you know, I think about Charlie's lifetime, and you look at some of the projections of some of these environmental problems, and if they continue unchecked, then it really threatens her and my grandchildren and all of those things. And so it kind of refuels my resolve to make a difference. And of course, I want to instill those values in her. I keep trying to tell myself, though, that she has to live her own life, and I can do my best to instill, you know, what I consider to be good values in her, but, you know, she has to walk her own path too. But I definitely think that it's become more important to me rather than, you know, yeah, definitely. And I mean, if nothing else, if she can have awareness and if she can have respect, then if she has those two things and they're really strongly instilled, then I think that she'll have a positive impact. But I mean, I'm reminded of when I was in, when my family and I went away this winter, we were walking along the ocean, and there was a family, two boys and a father, walking towards us. And there was a piece of plastic that was kind of like round and sort of like a shape of a frisbee, and the boy picked it up and he threw it into the ocean.
Oh my god.
Yeah, and he walked away. And I had this moment of real sort of inner struggle. I was like, what am I, you know, obviously by the time I got there, it had washed back ashore. I picked it up and we walked down and we turned around and started to walk back, and we met the family, you know, along the way back. And I was like, what should I do here? I really wanted to do or say something.
Did you?
But of course I did. But it just, you know, I had that moment of like, oh, I've definitely turned into, you know, that adult who's about to chastise, you know. And but I thought to myself, you know, I thought about some, you know, everyone's had those experiences where someone said something to you and it's just stayed with you. And so I simply reached out to the boy as he was passing me. I gave him, I held out the piece of plastic and I said, I think you dropped this. And he picked it up and, you know, took it from me. And the father said, you know, she's right. And it just, I don't know, it really hammered home to me the way that I want Charlie to live her life and grow up with respect for her environment and, you know, and the lives that she's touching and the resources that she's using and all of those things. But again, I can only do my best, and she still has to walk her own path. So.
Right. She has to have her own process.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, I did for sure. I think everyone does, but I just hope that, you know, she, like, even just in the products that she's using on her body, I just hope that she knows enough to never use those products. So, I don't know. We'll see.
I think that she will. Just seeing how much your own upbringing stuck with you throughout the years, it's hard to forget those things.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, my mom also, she worked in the home. She didn't have a career on the side. And so I've definitely noticed that my own attention to some of these things can sometimes, you know, ebb and flow based on how tired or stressed I am or any of those things. And so I'm very conscious of still giving her that experience of a really fun, engaged home while still balancing a career. So I don't know. It has a new set of challenges, but we'll see.
Yeah. And when I think about it in my own life, I don't have kids and I'm not going to anytime soon. So I'm still young and I'm still in that place that maybe you were in when you first saw the light, where I feel like I carry my soapbox around with me everywhere and I'm so ready to start a debate or an argument as to why you should think about this. And although I do understand you can't force people into it, I still feel like I have that passion burning inside of me to make people understand, which comes with the new generation. It comes with being a young person, and at times I find that I really appreciate that and I really like having that zest, but other times I feel like I struggle a little bit to find that happy medium where I am a little bit more inclusive. So it's funny to think about it in terms of my own life and my generation, because it's way cooler than it has been before. You know, it's cool to have a reusable water bottle, and it's cool to have organic coffee in your reusable water bottle, reusable coffee mug. And so it's not as much of a battle, I think, but I wonder if Charlie, as she grows up, what that world's going to look like for her.
Yeah, who knows? I mean,
maybe composting will be super cool.
Yeah. To this day, I can't believe that everyone doesn't compost.
I know.
But,
yeah.
But
no, but not a lot of people, not as many people do.
Yeah, I know. But, you know, I mean, you talk about this fire that you have in yourself, and that obviously, the passion, I hope it never goes away. It shouldn't. It's just, you know, what I found really helped for me was to share the things I was excited about. So when I found a product that I really loved, or, you know, something, that recipe to make something by hand that I really loved, I found that those messages were more impactful or effective.
Right.
And then they would ask me, like, well, why are you doing that in the first place? And
yeah,
then the door is open.
Yeah, people are a little bit more curious when they see you doing it.
Mm-hmm, exactly. But, you know, in terms of Charlie and what she will encounter, I have no idea. I mean, I think back to, you know, Like, when I think about my grandmother or people slightly, anyone who's lived throughout the 1900s, I mean, think of the things that they saw and the change. I mean, they went through everything from the car, radio, TV, internet, telephone. I mean, oh my goodness, it just goes on and on. And so I always wonder, what was it like to live through all that change? And, you know, you become blind to it when you're living in it. But I mean, the internet has changed our world, I mean, upside down. And it just, things are changing so much faster now. So I can't even begin to think about what Charlie's life will be like. But I hope that the more people who focus on these things, the faster we'll come to solutions. And it won't be from this fanatical fringe place anymore. Like you said, it'll be coming from the core of society. People will be asking for it and demanding it, and that in itself will have a huge impact. So I can only hope that we make huge, huge strides in a really short period of time. And I think we will. Just, if there's a tipping point to everything. So,
yeah, I think so too. I agree with that. I do also agree about how much of an impact technology has made. There's so much more widespread awareness about these things because of the internet and because of technology. We wouldn't be having this podcast if it weren't for that. And in a lot of ways, I like to embrace that. And then I also find that it's important to keep some sort of balance of when to just turn everything off and go and appreciate the thing that I'm trying to save.
Oh my goodness. Of course. Amen to that.
And yes. And for those of you who don't know, which is probably everybody, the reason why I'm on this podcast is because I harassed you through email for 4 years or whatever it was until you finally gave in. I'm pretty happy for the internet too.
Yes, me too. Absolutely.
We can edit that out if we need.
Okay, whatever you want. Yeah.
So, I guess in closing, what are you hoping to see in Pure Green? How are you envisioning its evolution?
I would hope to just keep doing what we're doing in a way and just see it take hold a little bit more and just grow. I mean, the more people who can engage with us and share and what we're talking about, the better. And to me, that equals success for sure. I mentioned as well that I'd like to see a little bit more of these issues perhaps brought to light in a way that still fits with Pure Green. I don't know. We're going to have to sort of feel that out. But, you know, Pure Green is definitely, it's an evolution. And so I try not to put too concrete of goals on it, because I want it to evolve organically and I want the community to influence what we're doing. Mm. So I'm open and listening to people and to readers and people who engage with us to see what input, like, you know, what works for them. And so I don't know. I don't feel like I can answer that very well, but I'm just excited about where things are going. And I think that we're finally, definitely finding a foothold, and just hope that we can act on that and grow it more.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Celine.
Thank you, Catherine. It's really nice talking with you.
So that concludes my interview with Catherine. What did you think? I had a lot more fun than I expected, and I appreciated Catherine's thoughtful questions so much. We got a little more serious than we usually do, and I'd really love your feedback. Share your comments over on our Facebook page at facebook.com/puregreenmag. Please share this episode with anyone you know who would be interested in learning a little bit more about sustainable living and about Pure Green. And if you enjoyed the episode, I would really appreciate a 5-star rating on iTunes. It helps the show gain traction so much. As always, we've prepared detailed show notes for you over at puregreenmag.com/podcast/Celine. I hope you have a fantastic week ahead. I'm Celine McKay, and thank you for listening to this episode of the Pure Green Podcast.